Welcome to the Philomani Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:53 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is November 7th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But let's have a review of the week to kick off with. This has been a rather eventful week. I suppose I've been concentrating on currencies for much of the last 10 days, so let's start with those. This was a week in which we saw that the dollar and the yen, which have weakened considerably over the last 2 weeks, they found support on Tuesday or Wednesday. The yen at an important juncture around the 100 yen mark to the dollar, and they strengthened a bit from there. That also coincided with stock markets encountering resistance from the upper side of their short-term ranges, and we saw some downward dynamics capping these short-term advances in here this week. This was also a week in which we saw bonds rallying somewhat, but giving up that rally towards the end of the week. And this was also a week in which we saw an upward dynamic for the oil price. This is the largest upward move we've seen since it broke below $100. And considering the fact that oil has fallen so remarkably quickly and so far, it's not particularly surprising that it is steadying up around $60, although it really does need to hold above that level to offset scope for this to continue to range gradually lower. Personally, I think the prognosis for the oil market is that it's probably going to steady up reasonably soon, but it's going to take time before it can generate anything beyond a technical rally in the current environment. This has also been a week in which we've seen a number of really quite recessionary type headlines hitting the news wires. For example, just today we had GM saying that they may run out of cash by the end of the year. And well, that is obviously an industry in the US crying out for federal assistance whenever they get around to starting to spend money on the domestic economy. The number of problems that are facing the US economy are well catalogued, and we certainly haven't seen it as our duty in Fuller Money to catalogue those challenges facing the US economy. We're much more focused on the types of solutions that are going to be put in place and whether they're going to work or not, and what the repercussions will be for the markets. So we know that deficits are going to expand, that the national debt is going to be remarkably high, that taxes will be under pressure from politicians to be lowered, but that is only going to put deficits under even greater pressure. We also know that the TARP rescue package, 700 billion earmarked for the markets, has yet to be deployed and will certainly be deployed, if not very quickly, certainly almost immediately after Mr. Obama takes over the presidency. What we've also had is the fact that there has been so much uncertainty before this election, and that is a resolution that is will should be welcomed by the markets over the coming weeks and months, because there was certainly a certain amount of anxiety about the inability of President Bush to get anything done because he has got so little time left to run. And there is certainly a lot of momentum behind the Democrats right now, and they're not going to have a problem with passing whatever bills they want in both houses. So they have lots of leeway to introduce as many projects as they want. They're going to be keen to get out of Iraq, and that will certainly help to save the US taxpayers some money, which will almost immediately be probably be deployed straight back into the US economy, building infrastructure and trying to get a lot of people back into jobs. That's going to be a high priority. And that should also be positive for markets, because with the consumer failing now, or Retrenching is the operative term that I've seen used. Well, that is an awful lot of money being taken out of the economy if the US consumer turns from a spender into a saver. And that means that government will have to step in and become the spender in order to keep the US economy from slipping even further down the recession slash depression route. They're going to do everything possible to avoid a depression, and they're going to do as much as they can to make this as mild a recession as possible. They may not be entirely successful in the latter of those objectives, but they're almost certainly going to avoid the depression type scenario. A lot of people are talking about the Japan experience and predicting that that is going to happen for the US. And of course, there was the glass ceiling on the Dow from the early 70s all the way up to 1980, around that, I think it was around 1,000 points. So it's not entirely without precedent, but there's an enormous difference between what is being proposed now and what happened to Japan at the end of its bubble. And the shape of the bear market is dictated by the amount of liquidity that is added in. And they're not holding back in the amount of liquidity that they're pumping into these markets. With interest rates heading as close to zero as doesn't matter in the US, they're already there in Japan. You had the Bank of England cutting by a full percent and a half in a desperate attempt to get ahead of the curve of events. You had the ECB cutting by 50 basis points, and it's almost certain that they're going to cut even further as their meetings pass. We can expect the ECB to keep cutting. The European economy is in trouble. The export-driven economies are also contracting. The Eurozone is certainly not going to avoid a recession, and they are going to be cutting rates and attempting to stimulate the economy as best they can. So we can expect interest rates to go down just about everywhere. We've already seen in a number of Asian economies that they've set up stock market stabilization funds in China, in Taiwan, in Korea, and they will certainly have a steadying effect as time goes by. We have just gone through one of the most stressful periods in markets that anyone alive today has experienced. And it is very easy to take our most recent experience and project it forward into the future. But we need to be aware of the fact that this is an extraordinary event which is unlikely to be duplicated any time in the rest of our lifetimes, in terms of its severity. We will certainly go through market and banking crises again, and indeed there's been one almost every 10 years for the last 30 years. So it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to expect the next really big banking crisis in 2018. But what we've had on this occasion is enormously troubling because we've had a credit expansion for over 20 years and now we're into a credit contraction. And that is having untold repercussions across the global economy. But we are also seeing that the stops are being pulled out all over in almost every country to get the markets back up and running once more. And the amount of money that's been pumped into markets will eventually start to gain traction. Now, there are continued worries that from central bankers that the amount of money that they're getting are pushing into the markets is not then being lent out by the banks that are receiving it. And we can expect measures to attempt to correct that attitude among bankers over the next months and indeed even over the next year. So this is enormously important what we're getting from central banks in here right now. And as Sun Tzu said, those who create the rules win the game. And that is almost certainly going to be the case on this occasion. But for stock markets and for those interested in markets, there are so many different things we need to keep an eye on. And the synergies between currency markets and bond markets and equity markets have, and indeed commodities, have never been so important. The unwinding of carry trades saw the yen and the dollar hitting unprecedented rates of acceleration, and they are pulling back from those accelerated peaks in here right now. So that's one indication that the premium attached to markets is lessening. The fact that the TED spread and the OIS spreads, which are measures of risk in the banking sector, have also contracted significantly from their accelerated peaks is another indication that the premium is declining. The yield on emerging market government bonds, soared in mid to late October, but that's also now contracting. So these alone tell us that the panic that we saw back in the middle of October is passing, but we're not seeing the feed-through in equity markets just yet because investors remain very, very wary. There is, of course, also the difference that retail investors are very much more invested in equity markets rather than in currencies or in government bonds or in the interbank market. So there is a dislocation between the easing in those particular markets and the still very nervous conditions that we have in stock markets. And looking at stock markets, from a purely objective point of view, you cannot say that they have bottomed categorically because the rally that we've had, while being relatively impressive and following a downward acceleration, is not nearly enough to make anyone who is bearish of this market sit up and pay attention. We need to now see markets finding support above those mid-October lows and sustaining a move above this week's highs. That would give us a higher high and a higher low following the October lows. And even then, that would only set us up for a medium-term rally to break out of this downward move that we are experiencing right now. We would need to see the majority of stock markets breaking back above the 200-day moving averages and for that average to start to turn upwards. And we're a long way from there yet. That indicates that the recovery for stock markets is more than likely going to be lengthy. But it does not necessarily need to be equally lengthy for every stock market. Obviously, the economies that have the deepest recessions, that have the most exposure to the credit crisis, to where the consumer is most over-leveraged, and to where earnings are falling for the majority of companies, are going to be at a greater risk of a longer convalescence than economies where you have budget surpluses and massive foreign exchange reserves. And you have, on top of all that, they're going to avoid recession and likely continue to lead the world in terms of GDP growth. It is only a matter of time before a number of these big Asian economies have a critical mass in terms of their own domestic economies that they will be able to ride out better than most the fluctuations that we see on the global market. They're not quite there yet, and it won't be until we see markets like China having a really large and self-sustaining domestic economy that we could ever hope to start thinking about them being completely decoupled from, and indeed, I suppose realistically, there is no potential for any market to ever become decoupled from the global economy. but certainly the impact of events in other areas should have less of an impact when domestic economies have developed enough. As I said, we're not there just yet, which does mean that we can expect the Asian region to slow significantly in tandem with the US and Europe. They could probably have survived relatively easily it with just the US or just Europe slowing, but with both slowing, it's unlikely that Asia will be able to continue to grow at the rates we've become used to over the last 4 or 5 years. However, that does not mean that the Asian region will not be the area that will survive best following this recession, and will also more than likely be the area that will lead markets on the upside. I would commend strongly the report, I think it was the Investment Notes report that I posted today, because they go into a lot of detail as to why you had such massive accelerated moves on the downside in the Asian region, and the puts that had been sold to so many investors in Korea and in Hong Kong. That would never happen in the Western world because people selling those types of instruments wouldn't be allowed to sell them to retail investors. And if there's any sense in the world, they won't be allowed to sell them in Asia anymore either. But once the deleveraging process ends, we will then start to be looking at markets on their merits. And that doesn't just apply to the equity markets, because the credit markets are also at valuations that we haven't seen in years. We see that a AAA-rated GE bond is trading at 500 basis points over treasuries. So you can get an 8% yield on a GE AAA-rated bond that is extremely unlikely to default at present. So or you can buy them at present, and they're unlikely to default, I should say. So that is an incredible dislocation in the credit markets. Part of the reason that you have that is because liquidity has absolutely disappeared. And while there are certainly lots of bonds out there trading at very interesting levels, that doesn't necessarily mean that one can actually go and buy them because there may not be an offer in the market. But there are certainly the potential to find bargains in this type of environment, and it is certainly the same in equity markets. There are lots and lots of companies that are cash generative that have been absolutely lambasted by the environment that we're in at the moment, but still have good balance sheets and good growth prospects. Once the deleveraging process has run its course, and we won't be able to say that it has run its course until well after the fact, because we've gone through waves after wave after wave of this type of selling over the last year to 18 months. So it's going to take time before we can really identify that it's over. But when it is over, there will be the potential to look at these markets and look at balance sheets and find companies that have been unfairly treated by investors simply because they were liquid and it was easy to raise cash from selling these shares or bonds than it was from other instruments, and that's why they fell so abruptly. It is certainly a time to be looking at potential investments with an eye to incrementally getting into markets, particularly for institutional investors who can't wait for the absolute bottom to have appeared in markets, but need to start edging into markets before the absolute low becomes apparent. So there is that to keep an eye on. We can generally script the ending based on what the bear market looked like. And considering the extent of the downward acceleration, that crash type scenario, There is a strong potential for a significant rally off these lows as some of the shorts are pressured, but once that short covering rally has run its course, then we would expect a lengthy base formation to occur. What would impact on that potential scenario is the amount of liquidity that's been pumped into the system. And the authorities that are working in concerted efforts right around the world could potentially support markets enough that we could get a new uptrend starting rather earlier than many expect. I hasten to add, there is no evidence that is occurring just yet. Indeed, there's no evidence that we're about to get a good. Actually, I should say there is plenty of evidence that there's a possibility that of a good rally starting, but there's no evidence that it is starting as of right now. I should also talk about the commodity markets, because commodities and commodity-related instruments held up so remarkably well while so many other stock market indices and asset classes were under pressure all the way through the beginning of this year and all the way through to July. We had a number of those commodities, the actual commodities themselves, topping out in March, but then the shares kept on going for another 4 months. And the obvious reason for that is that the people who wanted to remain long went for the best performing sector and pushed it to unreasonable levels. There is a well-known position in the market that there are some funds became caught long of relatively small cap companies and physical metals, and have been punished by those who knew about those positions by having those exact assets shorted quite aggressively. That is beginning to now run its course. I posted during the week a chart that someone kindly sent through of Xstrata and the amount of short interest in that share, which is quite unprecedented and unsustainable beyond the short term. So there is certainly potential for a good rally to occur in a number of these commodity related shares, particularly when we look at the potential for mergers and acquisitions to occur at these levels. Certainly, there is the restriction on M&A activity because banks are unwilling to fund just about any type of loan that anyone could want at the moment, but that is going to ease up. And there are a lot of these companies are extremely cash rich, so they may not have to go to the syndicated loan guys to get that much money to make the acquisitions that they want. And world-class resources in politically secure parts of the world will continue to be of interest to resources companies out there. The fact remains that we are currently in the greatest urbanization in history, not just in China, but in India and right across the emerging world, both in Asia, the Middle East, and South America. And we can anticipate that spreading to Africa in the coming decades. And that requires remarkable resources. And even though we have seen the production of metals and basic resources increasing over the last 5 years, it is still we still see the commodity markets where they are projecting that there will be deficits in a number of key resources if we see any type of increase in per capita demand for resources or for basic commodities. And that is inevitable considering that the population of the world continues to grow and the number of people entering the middle classes will continue to advance regardless of whether we have a recession in the West or not. That would appear to be a secular trend which will not be derailed beyond the very short term by a recession in the Western world. So this looks more like a dislocation within or a cyclical downturn within a secular bull market for the vast majority of commodities. We can think of peak oil in terms of the rising cost of production, and in the same light, we can think of lots of other metals as peaking out in terms of, or lots of metals, not just other metals, but lots of metals or other resources peaking out in terms of their cost of production, because the cost of production will continue to rise as the very best of the world's main reserves are exhausted and they have to move on to more expensive to produce mines. And that is a trend which is undeniably going to increase as years go by and demand for these commodities continues to rise. So, yes, we have had a massive drawdown in commodity prices and commodity-related shares. That has been due in two parts. One, to the fears for a global recession and slowing demand in the medium term, but also because so many of these longs have been pressured by shorts. And we've seen accelerated moves on the downside, which are out of character with the value that are in these shares. And the mantra that we have used over the last 6 years, and is no less true today than it was then, is that these resources shares are best bought following corrections. And while it is probably not wise to rush right back into full positions, there is a justification if one wanted to be long of this sector to incrementally adding to a position on a cost averaging basis going forward. A word on currencies, which is salient, is that right now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, there is no country who wants a strong currency, but there are countries that are willing to tolerate one for the short term. And the yen and the dollar both have strengthened considerably over the last 3 months or so, but they're pulling back from those highs. The Asian dollar index found support in the last few weeks, having had an enormous drawdown and breaking that rather consistent uptrend that we've seen developing over the last 6 or 7 years. But a lot of these Asian currencies are cheap right now, and we can anticipate that as deleveraging slows, these currencies will get stronger. That will be a fundamental support for their stock markets, and it is something that a lot of investors have become used to over the last 6 years. They're going to want to get used to that again. It will be a major indication of how markets are trading, that the performance of those relative currencies, and I believe that investors will be looking at the currencies of countries considerably more now than they did over the last 4 or 5 years, and we will certainly be looking at a lot more of those currencies going forward than we have in the past, because they're such a good lead indicator, they're such a good indication of exactly where money is flowing, and they will be something that I think so many more people will be watching, that it will be absolutely necessary to keep an eye on how the currency markets and indeed those bond markets are performing. The synergies that we've seen develop, particularly over the last 6 or 7 months, are extremely important, and they're probably not going to go away, so we will have to widen our net for the types of things that we want to look at if we want to successfully monitor these markets going forward. And with that thought, I will leave you for the weekend, but I think David will be back on Monday, assuming that everything goes well over the weekend. And thank you very much for your time.